And we are back with episode 256 of The Critical Myth. I am John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and I can guarantee this will be a vertical epic show.
And this is Brunsthumb from Australia, and I would have said temporally epic, but okay.
I don't even know which direction this episode is going to go in. Well, we are still going to be talking about some of the feedback that we've gotten, and if we have time later on, we'll be bringing you up to date on some of the things we've been doing in this pre-holiday period of time as the fall season comes to a close. But first, Edmund, if you could please.
We'll be discussing lots of different things that if you haven't seen them yet, you'll probably be spoiled on.
That's right. There are things we've already talked about. But since this is a feedback show and we're going back many, many episodes, I'm not even sure what we're going to be bringing up. I'm pretty sure we're going to be spoiling the heck out of The Walking Dead, probably spoiling Skyfall some more, and who knows what else. But those are the big ones that I'm definitely aware of. But yeah, we've gotten quite a lot of feedback. It's a variety of things that have been on our website, direct comments to the show, and then also some comments on the show from the VOG Network website. So definitely a nice little bit of a variety there. But our first comment comes from our show 245, Stripping It All Down, and it's a comment from Flacco Jones on the VOG website. And Edmund, if you could.
Sure. Flacco says, I actually found the episode of The Walking Dead you reviewed on this episode much better than what you guys thought of it. I know 8 isn't a bad score, but the phone thing blew me away. Maybe it's because I really did fall for the trick the whole time. Never read the comics, but I just loved it. One of my all-time favorites. I actually thought it had more resolution than setup. The next episode, however, is all setup, and it's awesome again to see how accurate you guys are at predicting key events in future episodes. My major comment would be, I mean, it's in terms of, you know, I know I feel this, where when we're rating things, you know, especially once you get into that area above 7, it's giving something an 8 is more giving the writers room to rise above it, you know. So it you know, it's like, you know, it's kind of the situation where you've really got to earn the 9s and 10s, as some shows have done recently. But, you know, yeah, it's kind of like that. That 8 is kind of the default where, yeah, it's really, really good. But, you know, you maybe had a couple of things that we weren't, you know, weren't so high on. And and also, I think in those episodes, I mean, coming out of, you know, Laurie's demise and that, you know, and that major high point with the Enemy Within, there was kind of this tendency to, you know, sort of, you know, compare the episodes to that high point. And, you know, so, yeah, I mean, it's not that we weren't, you know, we didn't think the episode was really good, because I think we did. And I will say for myself, I mean, in terms of that initial point when the phone started ringing, being someone who also had not read the comic, I really didn't pick up on it being in his head. And, you know, until in the next episode where the conversations got longer and you started, you know, and the voices started becoming more recognizable. You know, and then certainly leading up to when Herschel, you know, discreetly leaves, once he realizes what was going on, was when it, you know, it really started becoming clear. But, I'll agree with him that, you know, when that phone first started ringing, I really was, almost ready to buy it, as weird as it seemed. So, you know, yeah. I mean, I would just say it's the whole thing of, you know, no, and, you know, anything that gets an 8 and above means it's a really good episode. It's just, you know, especially with a show like The Walking Dead, we want to give them room to wow us even more down the line.
Yeah, definitely. You know, for me, and certainly everyone's kind of taking their cue from the way that I've been doing things for the last 10 years, is average is 7. And when I say average, I mean that it's a good, solid, competent episode. There's nothing wrong with a 7. It's roughly equivalent to getting a C on a test. It doesn't mean that you failed. It just means that you didn't excel particularly much. You just did average. There's nothing wrong with average. You know, we maybe have this feeling like if something hits average, and I know that a lot of people that listen to this on VOG in particular are also very familiar with video games and the way that those are reviewed. And there's this view that if a game doesn't get a 9 or a 9.5 or a 10, that it's not very good. And that's just not true. A game that gets a 7.5 or an 8, it has maybe a couple flaws, but you're going to enjoy the experience just fine. And it's all subjective anyway. You know, we give 6 points for what I would call the technical side of an episode. Two for writing, two for acting, and two for direction. Now, those are all interwoven by the time that you get to the end of a production, but you can usually tell what's in a script versus what the director is bringing to the table or what the actor is doing in the role. And certainly for us, we're all a lot more familiar with the writing side of things, I think I can safely say. Although Edmund certainly has some reason to be able to weigh in sometimes on performance, but we have experience at least in some degree of all of these things, whether it's indirectly or directly. And once you get past that, it's all subjective. And that's where you go from a 6 through to a 10. You know, I always say 7 is average, but if it's a good, solid episode, but it's just not my cup of tea, I might give it a 6. Where if it's a good, solid episode, but it's definitely something that I think they did much better at, and they're approaching that greatness, then it's going to get an 8. 9 and 10, you're really starting to get into the stratosphere there. 9 is pretty much going to be your default for a really just bang-up episode that you really can't find very many faults for, and that 10 is really going to have to be something that it could be flawed to the hilt, but it doesn't matter because it's just that good for you. And there's a couple examples of that, especially in movie reviews, where people go, yeah, but there were all these problems with this, that, and the other things. Yes, but then you walk out of that movie theater thinking that you just saw the best thing ever. Yeah, there's a lot of, when you get above 7 and certainly into the 8s and 9s, there are just minor things that may be different. And I know, Edmund, you just gave your explanation for it, but Bronstam, I would guess that you probably feel the same way.
Yeah. Sounds about right.
Yep. All right, well, I'm sure that we're going to be talking about The Walking Dead and our impressions and predictions very shortly, but I wanted to give a few comments from our show number 247, The Wrath of Bond, which was, of course, our Skyfall episode. So, again, spoilers are probably going to be coming. This first comment comes from Danger Mouse, one of our longtime listeners, readers, and commenters. And he says, I've been a Bond fan for a long time, and I, too, thoroughly enjoyed this latest installment. I really liked the Wrath of Khan reference as well. I hadn't thought of Skyfall in that way, but it does make perfect sense. Recently, I was able to see the movie again in a true IMAX theater here in Austin, Texas, and I was floored by this particular presentation. The sequence where Silva blows a hole in the subway line and the train comes crashing through is worth the IMAX price, at least in this theater. The floor was literally shaking with that crash. Anyway, enjoy the comments in this episode. Can't wait to hear your comments on The Hobbit when it comes out as well, hopefully. Well, yes, our comments on The Hobbit are going to be slightly delayed because it apparently doesn't open for Mr. Bronstam until the new year. So,
well, Boxing Day, which is, but I'm not sure if between all the holidays, when we'll get to when I'll get to see it, and then when we'll be able to record, it seems like it's a little up in the air.
Yeah, it is a little bit up in the air, but we will be getting to it in the early part of next year when we all have had the time to see it. Obviously, with the holidays, there's a lot going on, and but to get back to Skyfall. That actually wasn't just the effect of the IMAX. That was actually a subway coming right into it. No, anyway. I wish I could see the IMAX.
I think that it cost me enough money to do that the first time.
Living this close to New York, you'd think I'd be able to get to an IMAX theater more often than I do, but I think I've actually been at one once. But anyway.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to jump in. I can't remember if I mentioned this during our review. I have one of those, you know, what I know they actually call LIMAX theaters, one of those digital IMAX theaters close to me where I did go to see Skyfall. It was my first experience with this version of IMAX, and my impression was, you know, that basically it's just a bigger screen. And having been to to see some of the documentaries at, you know, like natural history museums where they have the true 70 millimeter film, you know, dual 70 millimeter IMAX. If you can see it as he says in a true IMAX, that is something I'd be interested to see. If it's one of these ones that, you know, is marketing itself as IMAX but is really not the true IMAX, you could probably save your money. It's just a big widescreen presentation as far as I could tell. So.
Well, yeah, I would think that the real IMAX might be somewhat different just from what...
I didn't see Skyfall in true IMAX to compare it to this, but having seen true IMAX, it's like, you know, no, go for the real thing.
Bronstam, any experience with IMAX?
No, I don't think I don't think I've ever been to an IMAX movie. The nearest one to me is up in Darling Harbour, so I'd be looking at least 2 hours travel. Longer if I was going by public transport, but if I was driving, then trying to park would be a bugger because that's right close to the CBD. And yeah, it's not that practical to go and see a movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Understandable. All right, well, let's see. There was another comment on this particular episode related to Skyfall, and Bronstum, if you could go ahead.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, this comment also comes from Billy. I'm assuming it's the same Billy.
Yes.
In my attempts to keep the Bond is a designation theory alive in my head, I sort of want to go into a conspiracy theory that all James Bonds have been separately bred to be the greatest spies of their times with similar backstories, but I feel that this would just be fruitless. Good episode, though. It's a good shot. It's certainly no wackier than the James Bond is a Time Lord theory. Yeah. Well, seriously, that's going to be a comic relief special or something. You know, one day they're going to get you know, for one of those things at Christmas to raise money for charity, like Children Need or something like that. They'll get Pierce Brosnan in to do like a big action scene, and he gets shot, and he goes through the big dramatic thing and regenerates into Daniel Craig. And it'll
well,
be awesome.
No, even better if they can get Christopher Eccleston to be Bond.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, I the odds are slim, but that'll be pretty good.
In that alternate Fringe universe, you know, where you know, Fringe ran for 9 seasons along with the 11 seasons of West Wing. So.
Well, that's 7 seasons of Firefly. Seriously, that's going to be the reason why alternate universe travel eventually gets developed. It'll be by some like crazy clever geek who just trying to get to that universe, and that'll be a Kickstarter campaign, and the reward is he'll bring back copies on DVD.
That's what all the money is for, just the blank DVDs that he's going to need.
Yeah.
All right, well, okay, let's see. We have another comment here, and Edmund, why don't you go ahead and take that? And this one is for our, this was actually not the episode that I have here. This was the following episode, 248. But go ahead. This is another comment from the VOG website.
Yes, this is another comment from Flacco Jones saying, on 248, you guys actually didn't make a ton of predictions this time, but when you did, they were still pretty right on, especially about Woodbury being susceptible to attack from a hardened group and not being as well fortified with just a single wall. I also agree with the idea that they were playing with the expectations of people who had read the comic and had that rape scene in mind while watching the AMC version, especially when the governor takes his belt off. They wanted everyone to think they knew what was going to happen next.
Spoilers!
And, yeah.
No, we alluded to it when we were talking about that episode 7 and the scene between the governor and Maggie, that in the comic book, and I know, Edmund, that you had been spoiled on it, so I'm not saying anything that you don't already know.
Doesn't matter. Yes.
Yes, but it was Michonne that was in Woodbury with Glenn, and Michonne had been taken off by the governor and brutalized and raped in just about every possible sense.
It's horrific. It's really tough to read.
It is. And it makes a lot more sense out of Michonne's decision to spend an entire issue of recompense on the governor that makes the scene in the in Made to Suffer look like a walk in the park. You know, in the episode, she stabs the governor in the eye with a piece of glass. In the comic, she basically uses a spork.
Right.
Okay. And slowly scoops the eye out. She gets the most satisfying issue-long retribution scene ever. But, it was far more brutal. And so, of course, when we get to that scene, and, you know, we all talked about it at the time. It's like, you're seeing him taking his belt off and telling, you know, and she's sitting there covering up her chest, and you're thinking to yourself, they're not really going to go there, are they? Because this is going to be really disturbing. But it definitely had to be them playing on expectation, because otherwise it doesn't make any sense. But it's also why I felt like Michonne's reactions were not nearly as justified on the show.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I mean, they really did not set up enough on that. I mean, you know, and the more I think about it, it's even in terms of, you know, I mean, I almost wish they had done more in terms of setting up, you know, maybe she was feeling some sort of connection with Andrea that you know, then it's the fact that she's hooked up with the governor, that she, you know, she's feeling betrayed, but you know, but they didn't even want to cross that line, apparently. But but yeah, I mean, as intense as that scene was, it you know, it really did not feel like it had the justification in the TV version. That you know, yeah, as I, you know, as I said, I saw, you know, it, I mean, it was really in terms of the lead up to the, you know, the, from the previous episode when it was Glenn and Maggie that got taken, was when, you know, in various comments on websites, you know, where people just, you know, couldn't help mentioning, it's like, you know, oh no, if, you know, what happens to, you know, if what happens to Michonne happened to her, I'm going to be, you know, you know, I don't know if I can take it. Was you know, when, you know, when that sort of, you know, that spoiler got out of the bag, but yeah, it, you know, so, you know, even just the way they were filming it and set it up, it was you know, no, they, you know, this was definitely, you know, one of the cases where you could tell they were playing with the people who had read the comic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I think that says it all. Okay, let's see here. We've got another comment. And this is also from Flacco Jones. This is on the subsequent episode, number 249, Getting Steamed. He says, Disney Parks, Star Trek, Walking Dead, DC Comics, Green Lantern, and video games. This episode had so many topics in my wheelhouse. Great show, guys. It was nice taking a break from the TV stuff to hear all the other things you guys are interested in. I keep waiting for the Walking Dead game to go on sale on the PlayStation Network, but the more great things I hear about it, the more I want to just get it now. Well, I'm guessing that the fact that just about everyone has declared this the game of the year,
yeah,
might have had a little bit of influence on that. And well, Bronson, why don't you go ahead and take the next one before we address some of those?
All right, now we are on to Flacco Jones again, and the comment is, feeling like I'm really missing out on Homeland because we don't have Showtime. Is season one available on any of the streaming services? I really can't help you with that one, dude. Oh, and congrats on 250 episodes. I actually just got caught up on Once Upon a Time, so now I need to go back and listen to your past reviews of this season's episodes. Thanks for the recommendation on the Walking Dead game, by the way. I love it so far. Thanks for the congrats. Really appreciate it. And glad you like the Walking Dead game. I personally haven't played it because I'm an incredibly, I'm a very casual gamer. I very rarely get new things.
This is one of those games, and I was actually curious, because this being mostly a downloadable game at this point, whether or not it was even available in the wilds of Australia. But
I think it is. Well, I'm pretty confident it is. Although I would have to double check. Given our this country's very up and down, usually down policies when it comes to games that have gore and stuff, it's been very up and down. I don't know if you heard the thing about Left 4 Dead 2, the Australian edition, where they decided we're going to edit out the blood from a zombie game.
Mm. Yes, I had heard of it actually. Well, I just figured it made sense for us to just go ahead and jump to that one, because he says, oh, you know, I've heard great things about it, and then shortly thereafter, he got the game. So, if you got it on our recommendation, I sure hope that you love it so far. And Bronstam, as far as you being a casual gamer, the reason that I asked if it was even available is that this is the kind of game that is, it doesn't really demand a lot of you physically, if you know what I mean. It's more a point-and-click adventure game, but...
Yeah, I did know that.
Yeah, it's more about choices, you know, where it's like, hit this button to say this, or make this call, or whatever. And the neat thing about it is that you'll make a decision, a seemingly very casual decision, about whether or not to tell someone the truth, or maybe bend the truth a little, maybe tell a blatant lie, in episode one. And in episode three or four, that will come back on you, how you decided to do that. Because the characters remember what you said to them and what they learned.
Right.
And you'll eventually be like, well, wait a second, you told us this. And you'll just be like, wait, you remember that? I don't remember that. Yeah. What do you mean? So it's neat in that way. There are certain puzzles and action sequences, which, you know, you'll be attacked by a walker or whatever and so on. But I think that that's the thing that people keep really jumping on when it comes to the whole game of the year question, is that this game gets under your skin because your choices matter, and you're really thrown into a lot of these same situations that we see Rick and all of the survivors on the actual show and in the comic having to struggle with, which is, you know, how far are you willing to go for survival? And yeah, you know, even though you're not actually physically having to deal with these things, you're put into that mindset very quickly. So I think that that's why it's definitely hit all these accolades, is that people are responding to the fact that it is drawing these questions out and making you consider that maybe the things that when you're watching the show, you're sitting back and going, oh, come on, no one would actually do that. And then you wind up doing it.
Mm.
So
I've done a bit of research, and no, the game is not available here in Australia.
Of course not.
Yes, apparently the what is it? The company Telltale Games. I'm pretty sure that's the one, because I know that there's a second Walking Dead game that's thing. But yeah, they as of a while ago, due to the ratings laws and stuff like that, they have no plans to release the game in Australia on consoles, and it's very likely that they just didn't even bother submitting it for classification or anything, because they knew it would get knocked back.
Mm.
Although apparently there are stuff, but I don't know. I would have to investigate more. But I've been hearing all these accolades, and it sounds like a really, really interesting game, and I really want to track it down. And the fact that my government is telling me that no, you can't have it, only makes me want it more.
That's it.
Right. Aussie, Aussie, Aussie.
All right, and then let's see. As we continue along on this Walking Dead tour. Oh, and by the way, Flacco, if you're listening, as I'm sure you are, I still haven't found any place where the Showtime shows are available on streaming services. So
yeah,
I know that Netflix used to, but they yanked a whole bunch of them. So
yeah, Showtime and Netflix. I was actually just in the process of researching that. Apparently, it's not available on free streaming, but it is on Amazon Instant Video and Walmart Vudu. But that will cost you $1.99 an episode.
Yes, but as Homeland goes, what do you think? Worth $1.99 a pop?
Yes.
Yes.
Certainly season one and the beginning of season two, based on what we've been saying.
Oh, yeah. I think that would be a fair way of putting it. Moving on to another episode here. Let's see. This would be 251, In the Kingdom of the Blind, where we were talking about the Walking Dead season finale, or mid-season finale. This comment comes from Autumn Fire. And Edmund, if you could.
Sure. I don't think the governor is using Merle as a plant. I think he genuinely views him as a traitor. Merle told the governor point blank that he had killed Michonne, and yet Michonne showed up in his office, put down his zombie daughter, and stabbed him in the eye. I think when he turned to Merle in the doctor's office with his one good eye, it was with a burning desire for revenge on the man who had betrayed him. I just don't see how he would trust Merle to work for him as an infiltrator after what went down. The brothers Dixon are certainly in a bit of a pickle at the moment, and I'm not sure an escape will make any sense unless the governor wants them to get away. I guess we'll see how it plays out.
Okay, and before we actually address that, Bronstone, if you could handle Flacco's comments on this from the VOG website.
Okay. Flacco Jones says, on that same episode, I agree with most of your opinions on the mid-season finale. I love the episode, as it had me on edge the entire time. I did have one issue, and that's with the ending. And Merle's future on the show. I really don't want to see this character become part of our group of survivors again. I think he's beyond redeemable for all the things he's done and for the type of person he is. All that being said, I also hope he isn't just a mole, as I heard theorized, and as you discussed on the show as well. I truly think the governor is pissed at him for lying about Michonne. If what happened to Penny really is what pushed him past the brink of sanity, I don't want to see him suddenly trusting the guy who lied about killing the person responsible for Penny's death. Still, anything could really happen, and that one criticism aside, I really enjoyed this episode and can't wait for the series to come back. Keep up the great reviews, guys.
Yeah, so here's where my thoughts were on that. Maybe I wasn't clear. My thought is that the governor is telling Merle to go along with this, because otherwise I don't see how the two of them can get away. The way that they left that cliffhanger, the only way I can see the Dixon brothers getting away is if the governor lets them get away. Do I think that means that the governor is going to let Merle get away for very long? Probably not, because, you know, if they were to eventually use any information that Merle gets about the prison to launch, say, an offensive against the prison, friendly fire could take place in that situation where the governor could just kind of turn on Merle and take him out at that point when he's gotten what he wanted out of the situation. But I don't know that the governor wouldn't use this opportunity to get some kind of information on the prison that otherwise he couldn't get. It just makes sense that this would be the way that he would go about it. And maybe he's hoping that the people at the prison will take out Merle for him. Don't know. But to me, I think it all hinges on the fact that that cliffhanger doesn't make sense if they don't get away, and I don't see how they could get away without the governor being complicit in it. And maybe you guys have a different... I know that you guys thought I was going a little bit... going a little far with that as well, but...
Well, no, but I mean, with you know, with the benefit of distance and hindsight, yeah, I mean, I feel there was kind of this setup to, you know, of where they're really leading us to, you know, no, you know, the governor's really turned on him. Even as Autumn Fire brings up, I mean, the whole, you know, when he's turning on Merle in the doctor's office, it's like, you know, yeah, that whole thing, you know, no, we're seeing that part of the scene. I could definitely see where then, you know, no, you know, next season we see the flashback, or in the next half of the season, we see the flashback of, you know, where, yeah, he was, you know, all set to throw him to the dogs, and then Merle, you know, turns it to, you know, oh, no, but, you know, I can get in there and give you what you need, you know, in terms of justifying, you know, how, you know, yes, despite the fact that, you know, yes, Merle has essentially set up the situation where he's been maimed and his daughter's been killed to, you know, because that's, you know, kind of what Merle does is, you know, always try and turn things around to his advantage. You know, because I agree with you. I mean, in terms of, you know, yeah, I mean, you know, them being, you know, set up in the middle of the, you know, the Woodbury Thunderdome there. It's like, you know, no, there is no way they get away without it being planned. You know, but, that said, if they can come up with a way where it actually makes sense, you know, more power to the writers. But, the Merle as plant scenario is really what makes the most sense to me.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Brunstone?
I think standing back and looking at it logically, I think you make a good point about how, you know, Merle being a plant is probably what's happening. I mean, yeah, it logically it works in terms of how they're going to get out of the situation, and it's what I would expect from a very, you know, sane, competent commander, but just from a character perspective, I think the governor is just a little too far gone and a little too angry, and that there is a lot of legitimacy to... Well, legitimacy is not the right word. I don't know if he necessarily thinks that Merle is a traitor, but Merle is definitely being punished. I think the governor is definitely going in that direction. As for what Flacco was saying about how Merle joining the chain gang, I think that, yeah, I kind of don't want to see him become part of the group because he wouldn't work with the dynamic they have now, and he's just like such a different character. He would be such a strange presence and blah, blah, blah. But that's kind of where most good ensembles come from, is just getting people that really, really should not be in a room together and sticking them in a room together and then having them face off against something far, far worse. I mean, that's pretty much how the group came together originally. It's pretty much how any post-apocalyptic group or, you know, world-saving team or anything like that comes together. So, I don't know. I will wait to see how it all turns out. Like, if Merle does wind up back with the chain gang, and if he does, whether he's actually trying to be one of them or if he actually is a plant. But and of course, what he's like, what he's like when Daryl's around, because we really haven't seen a lot of that. So, it could be good. I don't know. With all of it, I guess we just got to wait and see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Fair enough. And that brings us to the end of the feedback portion of our show. So we are going to go ahead and thank everybody that sent in feedback, either on the website or over at VOG. And please, if you have different comments, if you want to rebut anything that we said here or any of our listeners said in their feedback, feel free to send in your own. There are many different ways to do so, and we discuss those at the end of every episode. So please, we want to hear from you. Go ahead and do it. But for the remainder of this particular episode, we are going to go ahead and launch into a bit of a roundtable. And as I said, we are towards the end of the year for all of us, and that means that the fall season is pretty much wrapping up, which means less to talk about on the actual, you know, screen. So we have other things that we're doing. And Bronze Thumb, how about you? What have you been up to?
Well, some of the other shows that I review for the website, but that we don't really talk about here, have finished up. The last episode of Hunted, I quite enjoyed. And the last episode of Elementary for the year, that show is coming back. I believe it's been picked up for a whole thing, for a whole season. But I thought the last episode before the break was easily the best one they've done yet, and the most. I'm not sure what the word is, but I feel like it's done a better job than any other episode of showing that Elementary could be could work as a good show in its own right, and has it's got a groove, it's got a bubble, and if you're happy to sort of be in that bubble, it can be really, really quite enjoyable. Personally, I wish it would go, as I've said before, a little more like Person of Interest and expand with a bit of a mythology and story arcs and stuff like that, but within what it's done, it's good. The new Dresden Files book came out recently, Cold Days, and it is as the Dresden Files book inevitably are. They are, it was insane and awesome, and I read it far too quickly, and am hanging on the bell for the next one, which won't be released for probably at least a year.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, yeah, that's the thing, is it's like you get to the end and you're like, oh, that was great, it's going to be at least a year.
I want the next one. Trying to phrase this, not since very early in the run of the whole series have we had a book that had quite such a big mythology dump. Every book tends to introduce new elements and stuff like that, but this one took a few dozen things that have been scattered throughout the series before and wove them together into a big, 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 big thing that's happening in the Dresden verse, that you get the very strong sense is going to be a huge part of the second half of the whole series. I mean, Jim Butcher has talked about the fact that he's over the hump in terms of, how much of his vision of the arc of the series they've gone through that changes. Book 12 was the midpoint, and it really wrapped up what had been the big story arc of the first 12 stories, of the first 12 novels, which was this war that was happening sometimes in the background and sometimes very, very much in the foreground. And yeah, this book introduced another kind of big conflict, and I'm really looking forward to seeing how that plays out over the rest of the thing. But like I said, we got to wait ages for the next story.
There will be a, not to break in too much, but there will be a review for that book on the VOG network page sooner or later that I wrote up as soon as I finished it. And boy, was it hard to write that without spoiling anything.
Oh, yeah. I can imagine.
I think that one of my comments was Molly Carpenter. Enough said. If there's go ahead.
And as the member of the group who has been hearing the three of you, Gary's not here, but he's been participating, enthused about these books. Yes, I appreciate you not spoiling me since I haven't read page one yet.
So. Yeah, that's right. Well,
he will though. Eventually, I'm trying to figure out who's going to be next to get sucked into a bandwagon, me or John. Because we pulled Edmund into some things, and we pulled Gary into some things.
Okay, wait a second.
That's going to be interesting.
So my ongoing 26-27 season Doctor Who thing is not enough.
Oh, okay, then it's just me. Okay.
Yes,
I thought you were just
going to
do that anyway.
I didn't start until after you guys convinced me, but anyway.
Fair warning, it's probably not going to be Covert Affairs.
No, probably not.
Just FYI.
Probably not, yeah.
Although
I still think you guys pulling me into Lost and me watching it about the same time, depending on how you parse it, that it actually occurred was probably the best.
That was impressive.
That was good.
Mind you,
I think alternatively, if we go back to way before we were actually doing this podcast, when it was indirectly, you lot probably got me into watching Babylon 5 in the first place. So maybe it's all evened out.
Well, okay, yeah,
yeah. There is a certain symmetry to all of this.
All of this has happened before.
It'll all happen again. Yeah.
We were all just pebbles in the avalanche, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but one of the things, Edmund, since we just brought up Babylon 5, and I was going to anyway, but one of the really cool things about the Dresden Files books is that there are little things, incidental things, that happen in like book 3, 4, something like that. Things that you won't even remember that become huge, major things in like this recent book, where they will literally point back to this scene and go, "You remember that? That's when this happened." And you go, "Oh."
That happens a lot.
It's so tightly wound that if it wasn't pre-planned, this guy has the most detailed like compendia of minute facts to go back on. It's not
alternatively
funny.
He has fans who know how to use a wiki
that's
page.
Right. Exactly, but come on.
Okay, fine. I'm firing up the Sony Reader. Wireless e-books really are a wonderful thing. Right?
Yes, Stormfront would be the one you're looking for.
Yes,
I am aware. I've done a little research before this.
Okay, then.
Yeah. So other than that, I'm not sure there's a lot of huge things worth commenting on. I finally got caught up on a something that I've been meaning to watch for a little while, which is just this short, so far one season British show called The Trip, and it's by the guys who made the Cock and Bull story. So it's a British show, and it's Steve Coogan and Rob Brydon as fictionalized versions of themselves. And depending on how much of an Anglophile you are, dear listener, you will either be confused or somewhat delighted. And it's just this really, really, it's really, really fun. And it's like two parts, like British awkward humor, one part food porn, one part scenery porn.
Ooh,
it's a lot of porn, apparently. Which that just perked up with some of our listeners right there, I'm sure.
Yeah, porn, but...
Yeah, well, given that, plus I love Monty Python and Anthony Bourdain, it's like I'm intrigued already.
Oh, in which case, that in an upcoming episode when we're talking about Fringe, you were going to have a good time.
Oh, gee, you caught that, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Anywho,
foreshadowing, folks.
Yeah.
It's not just for Jim Butcher.
It's that timey-wimey thing.
Yes.
We've said it or read it, so now it's a fixed point in time.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care what the Statue of Liberty does.
We've become mildly self-referential here.
Mildly? Yes.
But let's see. Beyond that, I guess that's going to be an interesting thing because we've got various people traveling about over the holidays, and we've also got many things coming out, or that have already come out.
Somewhat, yes.
To the point where we are actually going to be recording some episodes out of order from when they're going to air, which is going to be interesting. But anyway, Edmund, what have you been up to?
TV-wise, I've been catching up with The Hour, the BBC show, which is now on BBC America. Rather enjoying it. I wouldn't say it's the greatest thing BBC has ever produced, but it and certainly all those folks who were seeing it and going, "Oh, it's 50s nostalgia, it's the British Mad Men." It's like, no, not quite. But it is actually just about to finish up its second series here in the US. They're on a slight delay from the British end of things. Really a lot of I was going to say a lot of fun, but that's not really quite the right term. But it's a very enjoyable series. In series two, they really got back to concentrating just on the characters, which is really the strength of the series. Kind of like Homeland, actually. It's like they got away from trying to follow these scandals of the day. I mean, they're still there, but they actually sort of integrated them more with the characters, which is really what was the interesting part of the show, especially when you have. Romola Garai and Benoit Chore and Dominic West playing those characters. And the only thing that concerns me is they ended it on a bit of a cliffhanger, given the fact that Ben has taken off in movies since he's now the new Q, among other things. there is some speculation about whether or not they're going to be able to do a series 3 or beyond. So, I am a little annoyed about the fact that we may not find out about whether or not he gets up off of the lawn at the end of the final episode. But that aside, after speaking of BBC shows, after many years of having the New Year meaning that there would be a new series of Hustle for me to watch, that is now no longer the case. So I've been catching up with Leverage. And I'm not quite up to date, but I am into season 5. And I have been finding that their move to Portland may have dragged the show down a little bit. There have been sort of more clunker episodes than I'm used to so far. I'm not completely caught up, but they were setting up a bit of a background arc in terms of why they actually had to make this move from Boston to Portland, where they actually film. I am hoping that as I catch up, it will pick up. And I think I hear Bronze Thumb maybe jumping in there.
I was just going to say, I think I agree with you. This season has been very up and down. There's just either really, really... An episode will be either very slow and boring or just really fun.
Yes, exactly.
I think season 4, I think, got back to what had made the first couple of years very, very good. Season 3, they had that very awkward attempt at a plot arc. That not until the very last episode did I think it actually came it did actually come together at all, and yeah, it's I still really really dig all these all those characters. It's a great ensemble, and like, you know, one of those ensembles you think you could actually just put them into another show for an episode or have them do something really really mundane and it would still be really fun.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, it's great characters, and, you know, actually, personally, I really enjoyed the... I know this is sort of divisive in terms of some of the reaction, but that whole 70s D.D. Cooper show, I actually really enjoyed. But then again, I was a kid in front of the TV during all those 70s cop shows. So it's probably right up my alley. So, but other stuff I've been TV wise, yes, there was one other thing I've been catching up on, which is Damages, and I'm finally into the final season now, and am greatly enjoying, you know, that as many of the Damages fans were hoping for, that, you know, yes, Ellen Parsons and Patty Hughes are finally on opposite sides of the case. So, you know, this is I'm just a few episodes into that final season. But that is shaping up to be the battle royale that all of us Damages fans were hoping for. So and yes, it is in fact the final season. So I am looking forward to seeing how they play that out. Although in Damages fashion, of course, it's always the flash forwards and flashbacks. So we already have a good idea of where they wind up, but the fun part is seeing how they get there. On the reading front, I've actually not been too involved book-wise, because, yes, I'm still ensconced in digital comic land, and, Why the Last Man, I'm now, about two-thirds of the way through the series, and, am still enjoying that immensely. Although, given the breadth of the story, I still can't see how they can adapt that as a movie, unless they're just planning it as, you know, making a introductory film and then hoping it's going to take off and they can make the rest of the story. We shall see, but the adventures of the last man and his monkey are still very enjoyable.
Very cool. You know, you were talking about obscure British shows before, Bronze Thumb, and I just thought I'd mention, you know, here in the States we have Hulu Plus, which started off very roughly. And then it became populated with all these, you know, 70s and 80s shows at one point, and then a bunch of anime. The thing that they've become kind of known for now is that Hulu Plus has an enormous amount of completely unexpected Australian TV shows. Current ones. They've got, like, not just Australia, but they've got a ton of shows from, you know, like Mexico and different European countries. But I'm looking at these and I'm like, I've never heard of some of these shows before. And then as I start looking at it, it's clearly like, I think one of them was like just talking about specifically cities in Australia. Like, oh, it's set here, here, and here. And I'm like, going like, wait, I think I've heard him talk about this before. I'm not saying that any of them are particularly good, by the way. I'm just saying that they're showing up over here. So it's kind of funny that you've mentioned before that there's all these shows over there that we would never, ever in a million years get over here, but they're finding these alternative ways of getting that content over across the pond in our direction. So for all the things that we're infesting you with... Well, it's interesting. I mean, that kind of brings up a completely different thing, right? Because we've talked about BBC America being, at one point, one of the few outlets of British TV over here in the States. And that it then grew to the point where we started seeing maybe the middle tier, and in the case of Bedlam, the lowest tier of British TV out there. And now all these other channels have kind of jumped on that bandwagon, where we get an awful lot of British TV on various channels now. But now we see all these alternative means of distribution, that legitimate ones, in fact, where we're getting a lot of these other shows from around the world that would never be on a network here, but they're on the internet. And, you know, for a monthly fee, you can see what the rest of the world sees. And I think it's an interesting thing that they've bypassed that whole concern of ratings. Like, are we justified in bringing this show over to the States and putting it on the network? They've bypassed that completely just by putting it out there. And it's like, okay, we've got the rights to this. We might as well put it on there. And if people watch it, great. If not, well, it's available. Someone will watch it eventually. And it could never get watched. But the fact that it's there, you know, they have that opportunity to kind of recoup that investment by making it available. So... you know, we've talked about before all these other shows that may find that outlet, and certainly on Netflix, the big one that's still on everyone's horizon is the resurrection of Arrested Development. But, yes. You know, they have other original content as well that they're trying to put out. But I don't know. It's interesting to see that happen, even as we continue to see that the ratings bar for network shows continues to be lower than ever. You know, shows that never would have even gotten an episode out with ratings that for these days are considered hit ratings. And, you know, you've got shows like The Walking Dead that are beating everything else on that night, including the networks. Mm-hmm. It's just really interesting how we keep seeing the landscape shifting. And that was where I was going with that.
Well, no, definitely. I mean, in terms of, you know... Within my lifetime, the fact that, you know, if a show just hits double figures in terms of millions of viewers, it's considered a hit now. Whereas, you know, like, you know, no, I mean, that was, you know, hitting 10, 12 million would have been, you know, oh my God, nobody's watching it 20 years ago. You know, I mean, I just hope that, you know, as, you know, and I know it's all about, you know, the Nielsen's and the way, you know, advertising revenue is calculated, et cetera, because, you know, no, they are commercial networks. You know, it's all based on the money they can drag in. You know, I just hope they can adapt to, you know, figuring out that, you know, no, so many of us are getting it elsewhere, and, you know, some way for them to quantify it or monetize it so that you know, they can take that into account, because you know, that's obviously the transition that's going on. And you know, yeah, we, you know, we've all seen where, you know, no, if you watch it on Hulu or if you watch it on the network, you know, the official network websites, you know, you get that little commercial in front of it or in the middle of it, or sometimes now three times in the middle of it, and you know, which, yes, can be annoying, you know, but, you know, if they're willing to count those ratings, I'm willing to take that, you know, shorter commercial breakout, if that'll help, you know, the shows that we like to watch actually stay on the air. And, you know, I just hope the industry, I mean, it is traditionally hidebound and way behind the times, that, you know, they can figure out a way to catch up with that and actually take it into account.
Mm. So, Bronze Thumb, if I just went on to Hulu just to see if I could find the name of a show, mm-hmm. and the very first one that pops up as soon as you get on there is a show called The Straits.
Ah, yes.
Okay, so there you go. So that's the stuff that they are promoting. As soon as you get onto Hulu, that is what shows up.
It's an Aussie show, but they somehow managed to get Brian Cox to come out and be part of it. Who nerdy people will perhaps recognize as the original Hannibal Lecter, or Colonel Stryker from X-Men 2, mm-hmm. or other things.
Well, that would be the one that I would, I remember him from best would be X-Men 2. That's because probably the most recent thing that I saw him in. Yes, and so as I click through their little offerings, I guess, or the things that they're promoting here on the front page, they've got something from Spain and Grey's Anatomy, but we'll let that slide. But that's the thing that surprises me is that they've got these they've got a lot of content on there now that I did not know they were adding to it. So hey, there you go. If you want to know the kind of stuff that has been pushing Bronze Thumb to instead watch American TV and discuss it here on the podcast and the show, then you can go to Hulu and find it.
Yeah.
Thank you, gentlemen, for all your help for this episode. And definitely, if you want to give us some comments, you can follow us on Twitter at Critical Myth, or you can go and like our page on Facebook. Again, that's Critical Myth.
You can give us feedback by visiting the website over at www.criticalmyth.com. Just check out the entries for the show and leave us a comment. If you can't find it, just go all the way up to the top of the page. There's a link there, and there is also a drop-down box for all of the shows we talk about. So please let us know what you think.
Or you can go over to the VOG Network page and go over to the forums, and we have a dedicated forum for this show. You can leave comments there for us.
You can also email your feedback to feedback@criticalmyth.com, or you can leave us a review on iTunes.
Or you can call our Google voicemail line at 908-977-MYTH. That's 908-977-6984.
And don't forget that Critical misuse of any and all copyright material is only intended for parody, news analysis, critique, or for educational purposes, as provided within United States Code Title 17, also known as the Fair Use Act. Please don't sue us.
And the comments and opinions of the Critical Myth podcasters and reviewers are not necessarily those of its distributors, partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. So until next time...